Hi, I'm John. I'm going to talk to you today about the architecture and implementation of an extensible web crawler. This was work done when I was at University of Washington with Steve Gribble and Hank Levy. So we all know that the web is a massive database of information. It's really interesting because it's got constantly changing data on it. In 2008, Google's blog said that they had registered the 1 trillionth unique URL into their search index. And it's really interesting to us because there are lots of crawler applications or applications that scour the web to harvest data to provide other services. Ones you're probably familiar with are search engines, but there are a whole slew of other applications as well, like plagiarism detection services, safe website rating sites services, and network measurement services. In our worldview, there are two kinds of applications that are crawler applications. You have the set of all applications that crawl the entire web and care about the content of all the pages that they crawl, and the set of applications that crawl the entire web and only care about a small subset of the documents that they gather. We're going to focus on the latter kind, and we're going to call them needle in a haystack crawler applications. And essentially, all of these crawler applications do two things. First, they attempt to crawl the entire web. And then second, they do some follow-on application-specific processing to provide their service. The catch is that all of them need to crawl the web, but crawling the web at web scale is actually really difficult. It's expensive to do, it's operationally expensive, and is wasteful because it discards most of the documents. A couple of years ago, we had a project called SpyCrawler, where we had to crawl the web in order to find drive-by downloads and find malware, and we actually had to implement all or operate all of these services as well. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to step through how these crawler applications are architected today and evolve it into an architecture that we call the extensible web crawler. Here in this diagram, we have the web on the left being crawled by a crawler at an extremely high rate, which feeds this data to an application-specific module that winnows out only the documents that are relevant to the service on the right. This pipeline is surrounded by a box that represents a data center boundary. The first insight that we make is to decouple these different pieces into different modules. Now, there are many of these applications out there, and each of them has their own stovepipe of this pipeline. So the first major insight that we made is that we should share the crawler and make it a common service. Here what we've done is we've put the crawler into one data center and have that one data center deliver the contents of the web to all the services on the right. This is good because now we've outsourced the operational difficulty of actually running the crawler. However, we still have to deliver all the documents, which can be really expensive, and it's quite wasteful because the filtering still happens on the services data center. So the next insight is to make the filtering a shared resource. Here, we've added a box that we call the extensible crawler. Services now inject extensions into this service and only receive the documents that they care about. And only have those delivered to them. We've solved all three of our problems now with this kind of architecture. We've outsourced the operational difficulty. We are not wasting a lot of bandwidth anymore because we're only being delivered what we care about. And we don't have to have an extremely fat pipe to deliver all the contents. This would have been great to have when we had the SpyCrawler project because we wouldn't have had to do all the extra work of running the crawler. So I'm going to zoom in now and focus on the extensible crawler and how a user would see this system. The client would first use a filter language to inject filters into the system. So here are examples of four string filters taken from the New York Times. This would be really good for a copyright violation detection application. And these get injected into the system, and other applications could inject their filters in as well. The crawler is going to crawl documents and dispatch them to the extensible crawler. Here, the filter engine is going to evaluate each of these filters against the document and decide whether or not to reject the document or to determine whether or not the document is a match and deliver a notification or the actual document to the service. So what are the goals for a system like this? Well, we want this to be a service, and we want the service to be flexible. It needs to support a diverse set of crawler applications, and the language that we're providing needs to be expressive enough to handle filtering complex web data. The system also needs to be scalable and deal with large filter sets. If we have hundreds to thousands of clients, each with thousands to millions of filters, we're going to be reaching the scale of billions of filters. And it's really important for us to be able to execute all those filters efficiently. Finally, we want to deal with high document throughput as well. If we wanted to crawl the web and download a copy of the web every 2 weeks or so, we'd need to crawl the web at about 100,000 documents per second, a fully saturated 10 gigabit link. And the way we scale up to deal with this is we map this workload onto a commodity cluster architecture. We also want to support low latency applications for real-time web processing, but we're not going to talk about that in this talk. So one question that constantly comes up is, why don't you just use a search engine? Why don't you just use Google to find these documents that you care about? There's fundamental differences between the architecture that the search engine provides and what we provide with the extensible crawler. The search engine is for humans to use, and they're going to submit millions of humans are going to be submitting their queries to the system, which come in the form of keywords. A human's going to sit there and wait until the document, till their results come back. So it's really important that these queries respond with low latency. And because there are many documents that are going to be returned, only a top-ranked subset of these documents get returned to the user. In the extensible crawler, we're imagining our clients to be programs that periodically enter millions of filters. These filters are known a priori, and we are able to stream the documents into the system. And it's really important for us to have low document latency for processing the documents. In this case, we're also assuming that these filters are highly selective. And what this means is that we're going to return all of the matches, all of the matching documents, and deliver them to the clients. So fundamentally, what we're doing here is, in a search engine, processing a stream of queries against the document index, where in the extensible crawler, we're processing a stream of documents against the filter index. All right, so now I've talked about the motivation behind the project. Now I'm going to talk about the architecture of the system. Then I'll talk about the implementation and evaluation of some optimizations that we added to it. And then finally, I'll conclude. So here's our system diagram once again with a couple more details. We're going to talk about three things in this section. First, we're going to talk about the design trade-offs that we've made in the filter language. These are the extensions that the users specify to the extensible crawler engine. Next, we'll talk about efficient filter evaluation. So in this case, when the filters are injected through the interface, they can be transformed and processed to work more efficiently within the engine. What we're going to do is we're going to use a technique that we call filter indexing. And finally, we're going to talk about how we achieve scale by mapping this to a commodity cluster. Essentially, what we're doing here is partitioning the workload across many machines. All right. So first, let's talk about the filter language. This language needs to be really expressive because web content is complex and largely unstructured. So in this language, we're actually going to provide rich operators that allow you to search this kind of data. So we're going to provide substring operations, regular expression operations, and conjuncts of these substrings and regular expressions. What we're really trying to do here is make it so that when these filters come in and after they're transformed, strike a balance between three different properties. We want these to be efficient, so we can execute them and index them efficiently. We want them to be expressive so we can handle this complex data, and ideally we want them to be accurate as well. But what we do in this system is we choose to emphasize efficiency and expressiveness over accuracy. So what we're actually going to do is transform the filters so that we get all the documents the original filters would have returned, but also allow false positives in the name of greater efficiency. So now that I've talked about basically the operators that we provide in the language, let's talk about how we execute these filters within the system. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to eject the filters into the engine. And essentially what we're going to do is have two loops. The first loop is going to get the next document. And after that, we're going to process that document against the entire filter set, making a decision whether or not to forward it on or drop the document. What this means is we're doing one pass per document per filter. And this is actually scalable, but not cost-effective. And we'll show you this later in the evaluation section. We can actually do much better than this. And we do this by making a trade-off. We spend more memory to build data structures that allow us to execute all the filters simultaneously. There's an extra compile cost now, this indexing step in the beginning, but this is actually amortized because the filter set changes very infrequently compared to the number of documents entering the system. The main benefit here is we've optimized the inner loop, and we can process a document in a single pass. So let me give you an example of how we would index a substring filter. Here we have two filters that would be from the New York Times, the substring filters. And what we can do is we can transform it into an Ahokorosik DFA. This is an algorithm for processing multiple strings simultaneously. If we were executing the naive version, the individual filters, we would have to do one pass per filter. But when we use the Ahokorosik algorithm, what we can actually do is do one pass through the document and just track our state within the state machine as we march through the document, returning the matches. All right, so I've talked about the language. I've talked about how we execute efficiently. Now I'm going to talk about how we scale this out. So first, let's talk about scaling filters. So here we have our system diagram once again, and documents are coming in from the crawler. They get sent to the dispatcher, where they are then sent to what we call a worker. A worker here directly corresponds to a single machine within the cluster. Now in this example, there's a single worker, which means that the entire filter set in index form fits within the memory constraints of that box. And when the dispatcher sends out a document, it'll process it, and in this case, reject it and drop it. When we have enough filters that we can't fit all of them on a single machine and up in indexed form, we can just partition the workload, splitting the filters up across multiple machines. We can continue to do this until we have enough machines to keep all the filters in indexed form. A group of workers together that has the entire filter set is called a pod. And now, when we dispatch documents to a pod, we must send that document to each node within the pod. There's also another constraint. When we send documents to the pod, if there's a straggler or a node that's slower than the rest, it ends up being the throughput bottleneck within the pod, thus putting a limit on how fast the pod can actually execute. So now that we have a throughput-limited pod, the question is, how do we improve our document throughput in order to reach the line rate that we were talking about? And this is actually pretty easy. What we do is we replicate the pod. And now, when we dispatch documents, we can just take the document and send it to a pod. These documents are independent of each other, and the pods are independent of each other. So let me kind of reiterate. We have document partitioning that helps us increase our throughput. And we have the constraints where every document must be evaluated by a single pod. We also have filter set partitioning. And in filter set partitioning, we have a more difficult constraint where every document must be evaluated by every machine within the pod. And now the throughput of that pod is constrained by the slowest node within the pod. All right. So in this section, I'm going to talk about some of the implementation optimizations we did and an evaluation as well. So first, we're going to talk about how we optimize a single worker's execution. And we're going to use two techniques. Relaxing and staging. Secondly, we're going to talk about how we optimize the performance of a pod, and what it really boils down to here is how we partition the filters across the nodes. And finally, I'll talk about some prototype crawler applications that we built and show how they perform within this architecture. So up top, we have a fairly long filter taken from the New York Times. There's a set of all possible documents that could be fed to it, and there's a small set of exact matches, documents that actually have that substring within it. The key issue here is that indexing is not very efficient all the time. It can be very memory intensive. Our solution here is to relax filters to a less precise version. So now the long 138-byte string has been turned into a 32-byte string. We're trading accuracy for reduced resource requirements. Now we have 1/5 of the memory being used, essentially. The penalty we pay is that we have relaxed matches now. The number of documents we actually match is larger than the exact matches. However, we still have all the exact matches within the subset, within the set of relaxed matches. Well, now that we have these false positives, there are situations where we might have too many relaxed matches. And what we can actually do is have a second phase that we call staging. And in this case, if a relaxed filter matches in the first stage, we can execute the full filter corresponding to the relaxed filter in a second stage to remove the false positives. This can be done very efficiently if our filters are extremely selective, and it's pretty cheap to execute. So let me give you an example of how we relax filters within the system. Here we have a regular expression that's actually searching for malware in web pages. What we're first going to do is notice that there are some wildcards within this. And what we're going to do is we're going to relax this regular expression into a conjunct of substrings. So we've broken it down into searching for the strings that were within that regular expression. To relax a conjunct, we're going to pick a single term. We want to pick the most selective term out of the group. And our heuristic here is to pick the longest string. Next, we're going to relax a long substring by picking a shorter one. So in this case, we can pick the first 24 characters. However, the thing that's interesting here is that it's really important for us to pick a good relaxation. There are many web documents that have script language JavaScript in them, and we don't really want that because it's going to incur a lot of second stage work. So what we do instead is we blacklist certain things from being the substring searches, and in this case, we pick the last 24 bytes because it has more entropy. Finally, we have the relaxed substring, and now we can put this into the filter index that I showed before, and if this filter matches, we can then execute the full regular expression to determine whether or not we need to keep the document or not. So earlier I said that naive execution was not cost effective, and this graph shows why. The y-axis has the number of nodes necessary to reach the 100,000 documents per second line rate. The x-axis is the number of filters that we've taken from Wikipedia, actual sentences from Wikipedia. And we can see that 1,000 filters needs a little bit less than 300 machines in the naive case, the two-loop version. And for 2,000 filters, we need about 550. This is scalable but not cost-efficient. So when we use these optimization techniques, the indexing, the relaxation, and the staging, we can actually handle 10 million filters with about 300 machines. That's the red line there. What we've done is we've made each machine more efficient, and each machine can do a lot more work. In this case, about four orders of magnitude. The penalty that we pay, or the trade-off that we've made, is to use a lot more memory instead of CPU. And this indexing is very memory intensive. You can see here that the y-axis is the memory footprint for the filters in executable state, and the x-axis is the number of filters within the system. Now, you can see that the index version of the filters takes about two orders of magnitude more memory. When we relax the filters, we actually reduce the memory required by about an order of magnitude, which we can make up by putting more filters on an individual machine and making the individual machines even more efficient. All right, so I've talked about how we've optimized the efficiency of a single machine. Let's talk about how we optimize the efficiency of a pod, a group of machines that has the entire set of documents, or entire set of filters. When we have this many filters, what we need to do is we need to partition the workload. We need to partition the filters across the different nodes. And there are different strategies we could have taken, and we've actually looked at two. First, we did a random partitioning where we just randomly put filters onto different machines within the pod. This is cheap and quick to do. We've also looked at a sorted approach where we first sort all the filters here in alphabetical order, and then partition based on this sort. There are actually a lot of sharing efficiencies that come because of that, and we'll see in the next chart. So here, the y-axis is the node throughput for each node within the pod. And the x-axis is the rank of the nodes throughput in that pod. So the leftmost x is the fastest node in the pod, and the rightmost x is the slowest node in the pod. Now remember, when we have pods, we're constrained by the slowest node in the set. So this actually looks like it has pretty good load balancing. The fastest and the slowest are separated by about 10%. When we looked at the sorted partitioning, we can see that we actually have a lot of performance improvement. Most of the nodes work about twice as fast as the random partitioned version. However, we have a lot of stragglers and a lot of slow nodes that limit our performance to the 4,500 documents per second there. What that really means because of our pod constraint is that there's a lot of work that could have been done by the other nodes, but isn't done. Basically, wasted capacity. And what we want to do is we want to figure out some kind of way of making those stragglers work more quickly or more efficiently. We actually compensate for this variance by blacklisting the troublesome filters. Like in the example with the regular expression with the JavaScript tag, there JavaScript string, there are certain strings that we just do not permit to be black, that we just don't permit. Other examples include href, colon, HTTP, meta tags, certain tags that are extremely common in web pages. We can also give the system the ability to just outright reject filters that are cause us to do too much work. So we've actually built three prototype crawler applications, and I'll talk about each in turn. First, we built a copyright violation or a plagiarism detection application. And here what we've done is we've taken sentences from Wikipedia, the AP, or Reuters news articles. Next, we built a malware detection application. And with this, we took regular expressions from the ClamAV open source antivirus package. And finally, we built a vanity application, or an online identity service, that basically searches for instances of your name on the web. Here we took regular expressions generated from a university directory. So here are our results. We tested these applications against 3.7 million documents that we crawled by using Nutch 0.9. These were seeded by the DMOS open source directory. And we'll talk about the numbers about the three different applications in turn. First, we have the copyright application. In this test, we had 250,000 different sentences from AP and Reuters news articles. We can see by using relaxation, reducing all these sentences down to 32 bytes, that we reduced the number of documents that we actually need to deliver by about two orders of magnitude. We also have high throughput on a single machine, about 8,500 documents per second. When we use the staging optimization as well, we're able to further reduce the number of documents we have to deliver by another order of magnitude. This is about one out of 6,200 documents being delivered now. Our throughput still remains high, 8,200 documents per second, and we need about 13 machines to handle this workload. Next, we have the malware application, and these were 3,100 regular expressions. Initially, when we relaxed these, we ended up keeping about 45% of the documents, which is actually pretty bad. But once we applied the second stage, we've reduced it down to the point where we only keep about one out of 110,000 documents, a significant improvement. We took a little bit of a hit, a 20% hit on our throughput, but it's really not that bad because we still can do this with about 16 machines. Finally, we built an identity application, 10,000 names, regular expressions. And when we relaxed these, we ended up keeping initially about 70% of the documents. When we ran the staging version, we ended up keeping about 13%, a one order of magnitude decrease, but we also paid for it with an order of magnitude decrease in the document throughput, the amount of documents we were able to process. So for this, we'd need about 170 machines, which is pretty crummy. So with these three applications, you can see that So the interesting thing about the identities is it ends up that short names cause us a lot of trouble. And certain names like Chan, Tran, and Park were extremely common with common surnames, and they're also common things found in web pages. There are many Parks and web pages about Parks. There's many Chans or changes or many Trans and transitions and transforms. So it's a very common prefix that we were able to find. And that's what kind of really caused the performance decrease for that application. So we can kind of see that two of the applications worked extremely well with this architecture, and the identity application probably isn't the best fit for this kind of system. All right, conclusion. So we've introduced a service that we call the extensible crawler. We've talked about its architecture and its implementation. It has a flexible filter language that allows for efficiently filtering complex web data. It's scalable and cost-efficient because we can map this onto a commodity cluster. It supports low latency operations for real-time web apps, and it's actually a really cool service if you're a little guy and you want access to the entire web. So I think that's all I have, and I'd be glad to take questions.
Hi, Trini from Northwestern. Can your crawler crawl the dynamic content generated by JavaScript?
Can it crawl? So the question is, can the crawler crawl the dynamic content? So we actually didn't really put a lot of effort into actually running the crawler. So ideally, what you'd probably do in that case is look for the dynamic content that the code in the script. So the short answer is no. We don't actually crawl the dynamic content, but the crawler could be extended to do that.
So my second question is like, when you design the filter, do you consider use some more complex language such as XQuery?
Could you repeat the last part of that question?
Like there's for the HTML or XML language, there are some more complex query language such as XQuery. Do you consider to support that?
So that could be extensions we could definitely add. XQuery is, in a way, very similar to a regular expression. And we could do that, but we didn't actually explore down that path.
Any more questions?
So I think it's very cool. I'm wondering sort of what are your thoughts about, it's sort of along the same lines of his question of sort of supporting more general query types, like, you know, sort of, you know, if I can send in a Perl filter or something.
Send a what?
Send in a filter written in like a little Perl script to actually filter through the... Let me rephrase my question. Sorry. In the future, imagine all sorts of applications that might want to do much more heavy processing of the index than just regular expressions. Do you have any thoughts as to sort of, do you have any sort of insights as to how to refactor this architecture to support those kind of more sophisticated filters?
So I think like what we can actually do is if you give us a simpler version of the filter, like our goal is really to reduce the number of documents that get delivered across these data center boundaries. So we would essentially be the first pass. So you, instead of having to deal with 100,000 documents per second, maybe you only deal with 1,000 documents per second. And then you can do your heavyweight processing on that.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again.